Whilst the Portuguese company's data in South Africa includes the following: Sonae, Amori, Hectama Group, Simpo, Constructora de Tamega. These are Portuguese names, so it's difficult to pronounce. CGD, Banif, BPI, Banco Privado, Best Investmento. You can see from the trade and investment flows that there is a lot that is happening between the two countries. Hence, we are saying that the main purpose of the text is... Mm-hmm. I can check that. The trade and investment flows between the two countries are as follows. In 2005, the total investments by Saudi Arabia into South Africa was 1.9 billion. And the investments by South Africa into Saudi Arabia are insignificant. So you can see that the Saudis are investing more in South Africa than we are investing in their country. The exports to Saudi Arabia were 1.5 billion in 2004. 1.9 billion in 2005 and 2.1 billion in 2006. Whilst imports from Saudi Arabia were 17.1 billion in 2004, 19.4 billion in 2005, and 24.5 billion in 2006. The reason why the imports are more is because of the oil that we are importing from Saudi. South African companies that are operating in Saudi Arabia in its Group 5, Bateman, Foschini, Nando's, Mug & Bean, Galitos, and Old Mutual. While Saudi Arabia companies operating in South Africa include Saudi Aga, which has invested in Celsi, Amin Tint, Flow Tide, Bin Laden, Sheikh Zahid, Jabatil Jala, Al Baraka Bank, Aliatin Trading. The problem is that it is difficult to go beyond the companies and see who is the shareholder of the company, but I think the Indian companies are big in construction. The special features on the Saudi Arabian tax systems are, generally Saudi do not levy income tax on its nationals. So the tax structure is as follows. All Saudi nationals, companies and citizens of the Gulf region that are carrying on business in Saudi do not pay tax in Saudi. They are subject to the Saudi tax, which is zakat of 2.5% annually. That is the religious tax that is supposed to be paid by all the Saudi nationals and nationals of the Gulf region. Coming to the personal income tax, all individuals employed in Saudi, both Saudi nationals and expatriates, are not subject to tax in Saudi Arabia. You can see why they most of the time attract people from South Africa to go and work there because they pay tax-free benefits. However, non-Saudi nationals who derive income from investment in Saudi, for instance, your doctors and lawyers, are subject to tax in Saudi. Coming to business income tax is levied only on non-Saudi and non-Gulf corporation nationals carrying on business in Saudi. The third one is South African Switzerland Tax Treaty. This is not a new treaty that South Africa is negotiating with Switzerland. We had an old treaty which came into force in 1968. So this treaty was a renegotiation of the existing treaty. Because the reason why the treaty was negotiated, because the tax policy at that time in 1968, it was not yet developed. So after the new amendments that came into force, we decided to renegotiate the treaty so as to align it with the domestic tax policies. The economic developments between the two countries are as follows. There are strong economic ties existing between the two countries. This is evident from the following. For instance, there is a SIS business hub, South Africa, which was opened in May 2007. The main aim of this SIS hub is to promote investment and economic activity for SIS firms in Southern Africa. Also, there is a trade and investment network Switzerland in South Africa, which was launched in April 2004. The main aim of TINSA is to strengthen economic ties between Africa and Switzerland to provide an information network of business opportunities. There is also a business kickoff 2010, which was launched in 2006. The objective of this project is to act as a channel for Swiss companies to reach South African companies and discuss joint projects around the 2010 Soccer World Cup. Also, there is also an MOU development cooperation signed between South Africa and Switzerland in September 1994. We can say that Switzerland was one of the countries that signed those development cooperation agreements after we got our government of national unity, because those agreements, they assist South Africa in terms of foreign aid and all other issues. The investment flows between the two countries are as follows. Total investments into South Africa by SWIFT, the foreign direct investments were 7.2 billion in 2004, while the portfolio investments were 11.1 billion in 2004. However, investments by South Africa into Switzerland are as follows. Foreign direct investments amounted to 354 million in 2004, while portfolio investments by South Africans in Switzerland amounted to 1.4 billion in 2004. The South African-owned companies in Switzerland are DBS, Investec, Glencore, Louis Group, Saki, Dimension Data, Freight, AG, Octane Holdings, and South African Airways. The trade flows between the two countries are as follows. Exports to Switzerland were 7.3 billion in 2004, 7.9 billion in 2005, and 11.6 billion in 2006. While imports are as follows, 3 billion in 2004, 4.5 billion in 2005, 4.1 billion in 2006. You can see from these trade flows that South Africa is exporting more to Switzerland than we are importing from them.
What about the preliminary hearing to put it together?
Can we do it after the ratification process? Okay.
Why?
I thought we were going to start with the ratification and then
why is the question? We will do that, but why are we not supposed to deal with this?
It's a different set of issues.
All right, no, that's fine. You may keep talking.
You may switch off your mic. Okay, there you are.
Switzerland,
Saudi Arabia, and Portugal. Any questions, comments, clarities? You can see that Saudi Arabia is a tax haven, essentially. Mr. Soko.
No, thanks, Captain. Around Portugal, there's very not much information. Now, it's around Saudi Arabia, and I think you say the tax haven. I agree with that. But where is this company? Osama bin Laden. Where is it? Oh, there. On slide 7. Yeah, on slide 7. But on a serious note now, Chair, I know that South Africa doesn't have, no other countries got the right to change other people's names. But this name, doesn't bring some kind of controversy for the country, I mean, associated with that. I don't know what is it producing and what, but I think that it has the element of perhaps people being skeptical about it. I'm not skeptical, but I'm just asking, what is it producing? And, because we know the fight against terrorism and what, but now if we have, sometimes people might mistake the name for other things. So, I'm just asking what is the situation. But around the, then the other things, I think that it looks like to me, some of these things are straightforward, except that we're importing so much from Saudi Arabia. I don't know if it is not going to increase our, what is it, that food cost? Yes, that's my worry. Now, thank you, Chairperson.
In fact, the only thing you might want to say here is the trade imbalance is so huge. And so what are the plans? I think Mr. Colony was raising the issue of preferential procurement, if you like, of oil, of a special regime in respect of especially oil, in respect of strength, because what he said is that he said to strengthen the relationship. And so would people not be able to negotiate a special regime price-wise in terms of oil?
On the lighter side, I'm happy to know that Portugal has got other companies here in South Africa, because normally this community is only associated with restaurants, you know. I'm happy that there are other products that we produce other than what I know them for. Thank you.
All right, madam. Before that, take all the questions, Mr. Colony.
Indeed, out of all these countries, essentially we need it look. Looks as though we need them more than they need us. But with Switzerland, the information provided about Switzerland is not. We are missing one part. The Switzerland companies, South Africa, Switzerland companies in South Africa. I think we don't have that one. But the figures speak louder. But essentially, as I say, we need them most. As you have indicated, we have that expectation that sooner or later there must be a preferential treatment in terms of the oil determined oil prices, crude oil. Hey, this is killing the worst cause in the nation. Thank you.
Okay.
I've got two comments. Saudi Arabia and the fact that it's a tax haven. With regard to employees, yes, you can say, but as you have seen from the slide, Saudi Arabia taxes other companies that are not from Saudi national. So if a South African company is operating in Saudi, it will be subject to tax. But if a company maybe from Iran is operating in Saudi because it's from the Gulf countries, it will not be subject to tax. So they've got preferential tax regime based on the nationality of the company and on the citizenship or residence of the company. With regard to the trade imbalances in Saudi Arabia because of oil, as National Treasury, we are negotiating a tax treaty here. At think the issue of preferential procurement of oil is not in our domain. Maybe we can say, I'm not quite sure whether it's Department of GTI's domain or not, but it will be difficult for us to answer that. Thirdly, with regard to the Bin Laden company, we can check when was the company established, because I don't know when was it established. And I know that the Bin Laden company, they are big in construction company, when I was doing the research. But coming to the skepticism, I think that is the domain of the politicians also.
No, no, the only thing really that is useful there is, what are the implications? Would we one day see America just coming into the country and bombing the vicinity where this thing is found? They've done it in Kenya, they've done it elsewhere. And so one day when George Bush wakes up, would he then instruct his forces just to come in? Because the issue would be, no, no, we are chasing terrorists. And so wherever they are, the government, South African government, is colluding with terrorists, if you like. Whilst on the one hand, our government seems to be saying, no, we are anti-terrorists, and et cetera, et cetera. But then on the other hand, they are investing in the country. They've got some companies in the country. What are the implications? And maybe it is a huge political question, but I think what you can do for us is just also investigate what the implications are from the point of view. I mean, you know that there is this company somewhere. We're not going to stop ratifying because of this company. But then the bottom line is that we are worried about the implications. You don't want to one day to see something that was okay, Mr. Fandamara, seems to have an answer here.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just wanted to add a comment, if I may, it might clarify a little bit. And that is that the Bin Laden family in Saudi Arabia is actually a very wealthy, well-known family involved in a number of high-profile industries, such as construction, as my colleague Young has pointed out. And I think it's a well-known fact around the world that I have to put this diplomatically out. That only the one brother took another part, if I may say so, Chair. For the rest of the family, they're really established in business, and therefore, I would imagine that if George Bush took such a decision, he would have got very bad information from his Secret Service. Chair.
So Osama is the only black sheep of the family. And somebody knows where he is, by the way. It's not our domain. We're not really worried about that. Okay, that's fine. Okay. Now, do we have any other matter of life and death then? Because it does look like the only taxation, I mean, there are forms of taxation that we see here. Some religious taxation, of course, some business people that are taxed, non-soldiers that are taxed, etc. Because it does seem that it's the only one that is, of course, it's not very complicated for us as a country. It is complicated for them. How do they handle themselves? In other words, their tax authorities have an own edict for themselves. So, Mr. Sokoni, would you want us not to ratify Portugal?
Now with Portugal, I propose the ratification.
Alright, any second for Portugal? Or Madam Oka says she wants to raise something about Portugal.
No, no, no. It's not about Portugal. It's just about the process, Chair, sorry. Because Ron still needs to do the actual protocol himself, and this is the presentation that needs to be before ratification can take place.
All right.
And that's why we stopped Yanga, because the prelims don't need ratification at this point in time. We will come back to you to ratify those, the Lesotho and Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
So the ratification for the three that is the front, Ron still needs to go to each and every article so that then we can ratify it as what you were starting to do now. Sorry, Chair.
There's no problem with that one. All what we want to check then is, you see, these DTAs are always very similar. Now, can we look at the most dissimilar? And I suspect it could be Saudi Arabia. Because I don't see any religious taxes, for instance, in Portugal and Switzerland. Let us take the details of Saudi Arabia then. But what you can also do in terms of the others, what are the critical things that you'd want to lift off in terms of both Portugal and Switzerland that would really warrant some special attention? Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. It would be most helpful if I could do it that way. In fact, the documentation which Cindy put in front of the committee is first of all, the actual agreement or convention, the explanatory memorandum, and then a document in three columns which actually focuses on the OECD Model Tax Convention, which is an international model which provides perhaps the foundation for all of these treaties. The South African model is in the middle column, and that is what we use as... that South African model is, in literal terms, it's the first offer that we put on the table when we start negotiating. And the third column shows the actual agreement which was negotiated between the two countries. If I could then, just in broad terms, mention the purpose of these agreements, just to give an overall view, very briefly. We say that the major purpose of these agreements is to remove any barriers to cross-border trade and investment. And how the treaties do that is firstly to eliminate double taxation. Secondly, they create certainty of tax treatment for foreign investors coming into your country. They reduce withholding tax rates. What is of more importance perhaps to SARS is that they're there also to combat fiscal evasion and also allow, in some treaties, assistance in collection. They also provide another mechanism for the resolution of tax disputes. If I could then move to the agreement with South Africa, Saudi Arabia. What I want to highlight here is those areas which are perhaps a little bit different to the South African model and what we've agreed in other treaties in the past. As an introduction, This agreement, this convention, closely follows the OECD model. A number of articles are different from the normal South African approach. These articles, together with other articles of interest to the committee in the South African Saudi Arabia Convention, are as follows. Moving to Article 4 of that convention with Saudi Arabia, a provision is added in paragraph 1b. Of Article 4 to clarify the resident status of exempt bodies. In other words, all we're saying there is that even though a body might be exempt in a country, it still qualifies as a resident of that country for purposes of this convention. this is not particularly relevant for South Africa, but it's something that Saudi Arabia required in this treaty.
Look, there is this. Oh, this is Saudi Arabia. Are you on this one? Oh, I should buy it. I'm sorry. Someone in the substitute, yeah.
Yeah, the slides are based on the actual South Africa Saudi Arabia convention. Article 5 deals with permanent establishment. Now, permanent establishment is the threshold for taxation in the source state in respect of business profits. And we look at various places of business which are said to constitute a permanent establishment in a source state, and therefore allows taxation once that threshold has been crossed. In terms of construction, this is always based also on the length of time that a construction project takes place in a source state. The OECD model suggests that that time period should be 12 months, while the United Nations model suggests it should be 6 months. In the South Africa-Saudi Arabia treaty, building site construction, installation or assembly project or any supervisory activity in connection therewith will only be a permanent establishment if it's there for more than 6 months. We also say, and this is important in respect of mobile services, that services which are done through employees in the other country, there needs to be a physical presence of those employees on a project for more than 6 months in the source country before taxation can take place. Remaining in Article 5 on permanent establishment, in paragraph 4 and 5, what we're saying is that if activities which take place in a permanent establishment, in a fixed place of business, if they're only preparatory or auxiliary activities and therefore are not activities which attract a profit, then it would not be regarded as a permanent establishment. Now, a lot of our treaties, we include delivery as being preparatory or auxiliary. However, in this particular convention, delivery has been excluded and therefore will not be regarded as auxiliary and preparatory. The result of that is simply this, that if you have a place of business, let's say you're a Saudi company with a place of business in South Africa, and all you're doing is delivery, it will be a taxable permanent establishment in South Africa. It's not regarded as auxiliary or preparatory for this convention. Moving to Article 7, paragraph 4 and 5 are somewhat different to what we normally have in the South African model. Although the principle is not something which is different to that which we normally follow. Article 7 deals with the taxation of business profits. And paragraph 4 of Article 7 in this Saudi treaty specifies that profits derived from the export of goods to a contracting state will not be taxed in that state. However, if that export includes activities which need to be carried out in that other state, then the other state may tax the profits arising from the activities. This follows general principles of international taxation in that we want to tax someone who's doing business in your country as opposed to someone doing business with your country. Now, the mere export across border would be doing business with a country. That should not create a taxation problem. However, if the activity is going to happen in the country, in the other country, then it's business in the country and therefore we should be looking at taxation. So that follows a general principle which is acceptable under these conventions. Paragraph 5 specifies that profits from insurance business will be taxed by each state under its own domestic law. Turning now to the articles on so-called passive income, dividends, interest and royalties. What happens here is that the source state inevitably has a limited right of taxation, if at all, under these conventions. In practice, withholding taxes vary widely internationally. The dividend rate in the South Africa-Saudi Arabia Convention is 5% where there's a shareholding of at least 10%, and 10% in respect of all other cases, that's portfolio investments. Article 11 deals in this particular treaty not with interest. Yes. Chair, the situation there is South Africa operates a resident system of taxation. So what you're saying is that a resident state has a full right to tax its own residents. If they're investing in the treaty partner country, in other words, a cross-border in a source state, we say the source state may also tax in the case of these dividends. But the rate of tax which is imposed in the source state is limited in terms of the treaty. So that if a dividend is paid from the source state to the resident shareholder in the other state, then in terms of this treaty, if that shareholder has more than a 10% holding in the source state company, the taxation levied by the source state is limited to 5% of the gross amount of the dividend. If there is not a 10% shareholding, then the source state taxation is limited to 10%. So that looks to encourage more foreign direct investment. Article 11, in most of our, well, virtually all of our treaties, refers to interest. But, Chair, of course, Saudi Arabia has a problem with the concept of interest because of religious factors. So, in fact, the heading in this particular convention refers to income from debt claims as opposed to interest. In this treaty, a limit is placed on source state taxation in respect of interest paid to the state of residence, and the source state is limited to 5% taxation on the gross amount of the income, of the interest, or income from debt claims, sorry. Article 12, dealing with royalties. The source state has a limit imposed in respect of royalties going to the resident state of 10% of the gross amount of the royalties. In Article 13, dealing with capital gains, paragraph 5 is included in this particular treaty. It has its origin in the United Nations model as opposed to the OECD model. And it specifies that any gain on the sale of shares representing a participation of 25% in a company may be taxed in the state in which the company is a resident. Now, the normal rule under treaties is that profit on the sale of shares should be taxable, and I'm talking capital gains, sorry, Chair, should be taxable only in the state of residence of the shareholder. However, in this treaty, what we have here is a situation where if the shareholder in the resident state owns more than 25% of the company in the other state, the source state, then the source state retains the right of taxation on any profit on the sale of those shares. Now, that may or may not be considered to promote cross-border investment, but it's something that Saudi was very strong on. In Article 14, dealing with independent personal services. Independent personal services are those services which are rendered by independent individuals such as doctors, lawyers, engineers, architects, dentists, that kind of profession. Also there, we say resident state has an unlimited right of taxation of that income. But if a resident of a contracting state is doing business across the border in the source state, then the source state should have a right of taxation once certain thresholds are crossed. Those thresholds are fixed base, a physical presence of more than 183 days in any 12-month period, and then in this particular agreement, a further test, 1C, is added, which brings in a further threshold for taxation in the source state and says, if this person is doing business in the other country and he earns in excess of the equivalent of $100,000 for those independent services, then that other state may also tax the income from those services. in Article 15 dealing with dependent personal services, and that in broad terms is income from employment check. Paragraph 4 of this, on a basis of reciprocity, specifies that employees of international transport companies operating in international traffic and rendering their services in the other state shall be exempt in the other state for a period not exceeding 5 years. What we're looking at there is a situation where, for argument's sake, South African Airways would have some ground crew. If they operate to Saudi Arabia, those people would be stationed in Saudi Arabia for a certain period of time. And of course, on the basis of reciprocity, Saudi Arabian airline flying into South Africa would probably have some ground crew, office manager, whatever, in South Africa. So on the basis of reciprocity, we say, in that line of business, international transport, there's a five-year exemption in respect of people moving across border to render services within that industry. Then turning to Article 21, in this article, is said to be brought into these treaties to promote the exchange of expertise, if I could call it that, skills, teachers and researchers. And the article provides an exemption from tax in the host state for 2 years in respect of visiting professors, teachers or researchers. So, as an example, if a South African professor was invited to visit Saudi Arabia and to teach at one of their universities, he would be exempt from taxation in that other state for a period up to 2 years with this proviso. And remember, it's reciprocal too. With this proviso that the remuneration should come from outside Saudi Arabia. So looking at it on the other basis, where, say, a Saudi professor comes to South Africa for a period up to 2 years, we would give him equally an exemption in South Africa, provided the remuneration comes from outside South Africa. So if he's actually employed by a South African university, there is no exemption. Article 27, dealing with miscellaneous rules, this article confirms the principle that income which is derived by the state itself, the government, including the central banks of the two countries, will not be subjected to tax by the state in which the income arises. So, for argument's sake, the South African government earns income from Saudi Arabia, or vice versa, the Saudi government earns income from South Africa, they will not be subjected to tax. And that just follows the normal international principle. That's all the comments I have on Saudi. Shall I move to Switzerland and Portugal, Chair?
Can we deal with Saudi? That look a bit interesting. Comments, questions? You may switch, Mr. Panamera, your mic for now. Mr. Robertson?
Yeah, just a bit of clarity. If a nurse stands over and works in a Saudi hospital, and from what you say, is she tax exempt there for a period of 2 years? Thanks, Chair.
Chair, no. This would not apply to nurses, teachers and professors only that qualify for that exemption. The actual position of a nurse who, and I think it's a fairly topical question, Chair, is that if a nurse goes over to Saudi Arabia for a certain period of time, the Saudi government would of course be at liberty in terms of this treaty to tax that nurse. But it's then a question of their domestic law as to whether they actually do so or not, and that's out of the control of this particular treaty. If I look at it in terms of South African domestic law, the situation would simply be that provided the nurse, and this applies to any professional, if that person is outside South Africa rendering his services, employment, for more than 183 days in any 12-month period, 60 days of which are consecutive, in respect of absence from South Africa. They exempt from tax in South Africa. So I think the situation with that nurse would simply be, if she needs that South African exemption in domestic law, we would have no right of taxation under domestic law, never mind what the treaty said. The treaty would say to Saudi Arabia, you may tax it, but it's then a question of, does domestic law actually impose tax? Because the principle of this, just to end that, is that a treaty does not itself impose taxation. That is the business of the South African or whichever country. It's their domestic income tax law which actually imposes a tax charge. The treaty merely regulates who gets to tax what, but it doesn't say, it doesn't impose tax in its own right.
Thank you, Sir President. The issue of dividends, I know that we have been doing so many of these conventions. My understanding was that up to very recently, South Africa was not taxing dividends in South Africa. But now, there seems to be a change now, because the number of countries are taxing, am I right? I think people are nodding. And therefore, as Article 10, for instance, shows here. Yeah, it's a pretty.
Okay. Yes, Chair, that is the position. Up to now, and still, at this stage, there is no taxation on dividends paid from South African companies to non-resident shareholders. As the Minister indicated in his budget speech in February, he has plans to change that, perhaps next year, to in fact impose taxation on dividends gained from South Africa to non-resident shareholders. And for that reason, in this particular treaty, we allow a source state right of taxation in the source state. So it would follow the principle which the Minister intends to follow by allowing the source state right of taxation. I think it's true to say that we do have a few treaties where that source state taxation is not allowed. And as the Minister indicated in February, those few treaties we will now, we're in the process of renegotiating this particular article, and in fact it would follow along the lines of exactly what we've got with Saudi Arabia. It would then be in line with policy, if I could say. Thank you, Chair.
Can I complicate the matter a bit? Let's say now we have a teacher, a professor or a researcher employed by a South African university or other institution. But as is the case nowadays, some of these people would insist that their equivalent of their South African salary be paid in foreign currency. For instance, I'm going to say, you pay me in dollars. What would be the situation?
Chair, yes, I think I would like to answer that on the basis that the source of taxation in respect of a salary is where the services are rendered. And the state where the services are rendered has a full right to tax the income which relates to those services, irrespective of where it might be paid or how it might be paid. So whether it's paid in dollars or euros or pounds, whatever, we would have the full right to tax the equivalent amount in rand, provided the services are rendered in South Africa. And even if that payment was, for argument's sake, made into someone's bank account in the Bahamas or wherever, it does not take away the taxing right of the source state at all.
Okay, the religious text. Do you have an idea how it is done? Is it done on individuals, on churches, on buildings? I mean, how is it done?
And for those people who would not be able to read it.
I cannot call myself an expert on zakat, but as I understand it, it's the taxation which is levied, for argument's sake, Saudi Arabia would say everyone who is a national of my country is liable to a payment equal to 2.5% of his wealth every year.
In other words, it applies only to wealthy people.
People who have income and assets would obviously pay more than people who perhaps only earned a low salary. And if you had no income and no assets, well, then there would be no taxation. Exactly.
Just to get clarity on your question, so across the board, if you earn money, you pay 2.5%.
And a Saudi national, yes. If you're a South African company, for argument's sake, doing business in South Africa, you're subject to a full rate of corporate taxation.
That's an interesting one. We might want to consider that maybe also as a comment in this country. I know Mr. Koyaman is always asking for more money for the Northern Cape, for instance. And I think, especially for everybody that is religious, I think it's something that people might want to go to. I mean, all religious people are not scared to pay. That is why you've got so many churches all over this show. They pay their tenth, the tithe, the tithe. So I think it's something that we might want to propose as a committee, just in terms of addressing some of the backlogs in some provinces, in some municipalities. I mean, something that we might want to look at, Mr. Shoko.
Chairperson, if you go to Limpopo, that is a big change. You go to the Eastern Cape, the Metro Cape, you go somewhere. Now, what do you pay? And here now is no longer that big now. You know, what do you pay in South Africa if you think about this? I guess the issue.
No, what I'm saying, look, it's a matter that relates to development. We're talking developmental issues, and so there are, so for instance, Limpopo is very huge backlogs in respect of many things, infrastructure, etc. And therefore, what becomes the role of that church in that area, but also just broadly in South Africa, because it's a huge church in the country. I mean, one of you as members, there's this something called members' proposals, legislative proposals, might want to think about it. Just to say, well, what is it that can be done in the context of this religious declaration? I think it's an interesting innovation. Anybody who's really the Shembe Church, is it Shembe or Shelembe or Shelembe? I mean, those kinds of churches. I'm not saying you might be wanting to reduce the emergence of churches, but you're saying, just to, because there are so much religious there. There's a big church called in Johannesburg, Granberg. What is the church? Rema. And I think that's a church where you really have rich people. And so, Madam Kuhn?
May I please apologize, Chairperson? I look at this time, it's 1500 hours when you will be making. I'm so sorry about that. No, the churches are doing a lot of development work.
So you don't want them. I mean, I'm just raising this. Maybe one of you members might want to do some further research. terms of this legislative proposals.
Alright, we're done then with Saudi Arabia. Any matter of life and death in that one? Right? Let us take Portugal.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to, if I may, Chair, just approach Portugal on the same basis as done with Saudi Arabia. And therefore, I'd like to start at Article 5 of that particular treaty, also dealing with this definition of permanent establishment and once again construction. And in this particular treaty,
can I say the following, that anybody who really feels they would want to take something from the bar and the restaurant can do so without making any noise. There is a gentleman here who's much more energetic. I think he would want to assist you. Huh? Annually. So I'm saying, even for the presenter, that if you feel dry, you can instruct anybody just to pick up something for you. Kamla seems to be very hungry. He just could not contain himself. Proceed.
Thank you very much, Chair. Article 5, permanent establishment, construction sites. In this particular treaty, we say that those building sites, construction, installation, or assembly projects, where any supervisory activity in connection therewith has to last more than 12 months before it is regarded to be a permanent establishment. Article 6 of this treaty deals with income from immovable property. And the principle of taxation here is that the source state, in other words, the state where the immovable property is situated, should have an unlimited right of taxation. Paragraph 4 therefore provides that the paragraphs which grant taxing rights in respect of immovable property should also apply to income from immovable property used for the performance of independent personal services. In other words, perhaps we're a doctor or an engineer or somebody gets income from immovable property and is used in the performance of those independent personal services. Taxation should happen where the property is situated. Paragraph 5 goes a little bit further and says that the foregoing paragraphs of this article should apply also to income from movable property and income derived from services as long as it's connected to the use or the right to use the immovable property. So in other words, everything connected to immovable property should be subjected to taxation in the state where the immovable property is situated. And that's the normal principle in international taxation. Article 8 deals with international transport, ships and aircraft in this particular treaty. And the principle here is that each country should tax its own residents. So in other words, South African Airways is taxed then only in South Africa, although it might operate in a number of countries around the world. And that, of course, works on the basis of reciprocity. The difference in this treaty or agreement, if I could call it a difference, is simply that there's an acknowledgement that some of these international transport companies work as partnerships across borders, as for argument's sake, Scandinavia, where the partners are Norway, Sweden, and Denmark. And what we say is that this treaty, in terms of a partnership, will apply only to the portion of profits which relate to the country which is a party to this treaty. So if, for argument's sake, Portugal was in partnership with Spain in an airline which flew to South Africa, this treaty would only cover Portugal's portion of the profits in that partnership. Coming now to Article 10 and dividends. the limitations on withholding taxation in the source state in this particular convention, it's 10% taxation if the shareholding is at least 25%, and 15% in all other cases. With regard to interest, the taxation in the source state in terms of this convention is limited to 10% in the source state. Paragraph 3 provides also an exemption which says that if this interest is derived by the state or a political or administrative subdivision or local authority or any entity wholly owned and controlled by the state or subdivision or local authority, then the source state will have no taxing right. In other words, you do not tax another state. Article 12, royalties. In this particular agreement, royalties may be taxed in the source state, but the limitation is 10% of the gross amount of the royalties. Independent personal services, back to the lawyers and dentists and doctors, Chair. This is a fairly normal treaty in terms of how we used to approach these people, and I'll explain that in another treaty. But what we're simply saying here is that the threshold for taxation in the source state is the existence of a fixed base or 183 days physical presence, because we're talking about individuals here as opposed to legal entities such as companies. Article 18, dealing with pensions. In this particular agreement, it says that pensions and other similar remuneration in consideration of past employment is taxable only in the state of residence of the person receiving that pension. Of course, South Africa, in terms of domestic law, still uses a source principle for taxation of pensions. So that in South Africa, we can only tax pensions which actually arise from a source in South Africa. In other words, the employment was exercised here. So this is not our favoured position. But unfortunately, with regard to Portugal, it's an absolute bottom line position for them. As a result, we were able to extend this article a little bit in that we got them to agree that an annuity which is paid to an individual may be taxed in the state of the insurer at a rate not exceeding 12% of the income portion of that annuity, which exceeds $10,000 per annum, or its equivalent. So simply, although if a South African, let's say, emigrates to Portugal sometime after he retires, the sole right of taxation of his pension then rests in Portugal. It works both ways, in that a Portuguese resident who emigrates to South Africa on retirement, the treaty would say sole right of taxation in South Africa. That, of course, is a problem under domestic law. But what we have covered here is an individual who leaves South Africa and is in receipt of a fairly substantial annuity, which has been contracted through a South African insurer, and he's now a resident in Portugal. Because of the fact that it's done through a South African insurer, we retain a right of taxation in South Africa. Article 20 deals with professors and researchers, and it works on the same basis as the article which we spoke about with Saudi Arabia, in that it provides an exemption for 2 years in respect of visiting professors or researchers. However, the remuneration must be derived from outside the host state or the state being visited. Article 25, dealing with the mutual agreement procedure. The mutual agreement procedure is almost an alternative dispute resolution method which you find in every tax treaty. And it allows taxpayers of the one state who have a problem with how they've been treated in the other state to approach their tax authority, who is then allowed, and in terms of this treaty, to take that matter up directly with the tax authority in the other state. And finally, in the protocol with regard to the Portuguese treaty, It clarifies paragraph 3 of article 24, which deals with non-discrimination, and it provides in that particular paragraph that there is an exemption for dividends declared by non-resident companies. Sorry. Let me just get that right. What we're saying under the non-discrimination article is simply that the fact that we impose taxation on branches of foreign companies in South Africa at a higher rate than we impose on domestic companies will not be regarded as discrimination. And the reason for that, of course, is that domestic companies are, at this stage, liable also to the secondary tax on companies, which pushes up their effective rate. So while we tax a domestic company at 29%, we tax a foreign branch at 34%. However, the foreign branch does not pay SDC. So what we're saying here, that as long as we have this system, as long as there's no abolishing of SDC, this additional taxation on foreign branches will not be regarded as discriminatory, and in addition, that this situation will continue while South Africa in fact does not tax dividends which are paid into South Africa in terms of the participation exemption which currently is provided under our income tax system. What we say under the participation exemption is, of course, that if you as a South African own more than 20% of a foreign company, then we will not tax the dividend that you receive from that foreign company. Those are all the comments on Portugal, Chair. Thank you.
Well, you can... Is that the juice you would want to have in front of you, by the way? Okay. You can start drinking now. Any comments, clarities on Portugal? Straightforward, Mr. Sobel.
You know, Mr. President, Mr. Panamera, I think that in the last protocol, Article 24, you really tried to explain, you know, very hard. Very hard. But I think somehow I missed it. But I just for interest sake, why is this the difference between this protocol and Saudi Arabia, for example? With Saudi Arabia is different. Is it because we're talking that debt claim or what? Where is the difference? In Saudi Arabia, it's clear that we're talking about taxation of this of the debt.
Yes. Something is different. The language is different.
Chair, yes, there's a very substantial difference between the treaty with Saudi Arabia and the treaty with Portugal. The treaty with Portugal has an article dealing with non-discrimination, which says that basically you will not treat the nationals of your treaty partner country any worse than you treat your own people. That is not present in the treaty with Saudi Arabia for the simple matter that their whole system is based on treating the individuals or nationals of other countries differently to the way they treat their own nationals. Because in Saudi Arabia, their own nationals are subject only to zakat, whereas they do tax, for argument's sake, non-resident, non-Saudi companies doing business in Saudi. But it's not that they would say, we will tax a South African company doing. As long as the company is not Saudi, it could be American, British, whatever, they will tax it. But that means that they do in fact discriminate. between their own residents and non-residents. So therefore there's no article dealing with non-discrimination in the Saudi agreement. There is, however, one in the treaty between South Africa and Portugal. And therefore, what we do in our treaties is simply to say that the way we impose taxation on foreign branches at the higher percentage rate of 34% should not be regarded to be discrimination. And what we have in the protocol is merely protection for Portugal in that we're saying if we scrap STC at some stage, in other words, therefore there's no quid pro quo, then it would be discriminatory to just impose higher taxation on a foreign branch. And should that situation arise, and should the participation exemption in fact fall away, then that protection which we've got under the non-discrimination article would cease to apply. So it's virtually protection for Portugal.
No, no. Look, we know the character of the state of Saudi Arabia. It's a bit complicated. And so it has its own ways of doing things. Of course, countries, when they enter into this, would always respect your sovereignty. And therefore you're not going to be able to tell people not to do this and that and that. The whole range of diplomatic issues that are really involved here. And so I think you are really raising an interesting matter because as you said earlier, I think at the level of individuals, for instance, the biggest chunk of taxation is from Sakhar, whatever you call it. And so Portugal does not even have that. Because Portugal has its own political setup, religious setup, which would be kind of similar to South Africa. And so these are some of the complications really in terms of your international relations. And yeah. Now, any other matter of life and death with Portugal? Comments, questions, Mr. Kadi?
Just for interest
I don't eat chips anyway. Yeah. Just for interest sake, Stefan and Mabe talked about the determination of determining profit. Just for interest sake, in the airline industry, flights, regular flights between two countries, the profit, which part would you say will be profit? Going into that country or another portion when that person flies back into the mother country? Where is the profit derived or determined?
It's for that reason that in our treaties we give an exclusive right of taxation to the state of residence of that airliner. So that we don't have to say, well, this portion of the profit was in that country or that portion was in my country. We simply say, look at where the airline is a resident. And that country has the sole right to tax it. So, SA, you may tax South African Airways and you have the sole right to do it. Portugal, you will tax your airline and you have the sole right to do that. So that question doesn't arise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only thing I can tell you members about Portugal and Portuguese people is that when they eat a palm stick, they don't eat the fat they eat. They eat the seedlings of the palm stick. Yeah, they never eat that. We told this is our way of doing, and eat the pumpkin. And there's a whole range of things that you can learn that are very interesting and good about Portuguese. So if you're learning a great Portuguese, you must be ready to change your mind. In terms of eating habits and other things.
But when are we signing the convention in China?
Can you take our friend, Israel, in the, our friend, the chief?
Hang on. There's somebody who's already saying to me here, it cannot proceed that they've got to grab something to here. Well, I agree with her. She's my right hand person. It's not great, essentially. It's about yourself also just grabbing something here before it's finished. Oh, yeah, you're yeah, right. 5 minutes back. You're right.
We might want to call in some other people.
Madam Pastor Cindy.
The first thing wrong is
this is a response we had asked for. Remember the Public Works Department has spoken.